Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Ready. We are here for a news show, which means I need some help. So let's bring on Matt to Rumpit. Happy Valentine's Day, Matt.
And happy Valentine's Day to you too. I hope you notice that I got you the Valentine's Day present of a brand new set of show notes set up so that your eyes can comprehend them.
And as a bonus, you were nearly on time for the call as well. That's love.
I'm sorry, what time is it now?
Yeah, look, this is the least late we've ever started a live stream. Now, I have to say that last week we did say that we were going to do a pre-record because it's Valentine's Day tonight, and I assumed that everyone would want to not be in trouble. But it turns out that all of the panel don't care about Valentine's Day, so we decided to just go ahead and do it.
Yes, well, being in trouble simply means more iRacing.
Well, it does, yeah. Get to the shed. Yeah, when you're a kid and you get sent to your room, that was like the best thing ever. Yeah, that's great. My Nintendo Entertainment System is in there, so that's fine. So instead of doing a pre-record, we decided to stream it. And as I mentioned a few weeks back, we were going to make a few of the live streams patron only, and then the finished product would go out to everybody as normal on a Monday. It's not that we don't like our live stream people, Matt. It's just that we had decided we wanted the odd more chill one with our patron friends.
Yeah, it's a little more convivial, the atmosphere. And after the lovely quiz that you ran for the patrons, which my family enjoyed very much, I have to say thank you for giving us a family activity, a thing we can all do together. It seems like a perfect follow-up to just invite them on for a little bit of a holiday, chill, relax YouTube thing.
Okay, yes. I should really promote the fact that we run those quizzes. We've done two so far during this most recent UK lockdown. There'll be another one next month. And Catman is putting on an end-of-the-month Patreon F1 quiz, which is done over a Zoom call using a website.
And since we're promoting things, can I briefly mention that my second article has gone up on the Reddit Formula One subreddit?
Yes.
Okay, well, I will mention then that my second article has gone up on the Formula One subreddit at Reddit, and this time we've made an audio version, and I have to thank one of our panelists today for putting the idea in my head, because he looked at the first one we wrote and said, I don't read more than 10 words before I quit. You must make an audio version or I will not partake.
There is an audio version, and we're going to link to that in the show notes here, because that is being supported on the technical side by Missed Apex and Spanners Ready Media. But welcome to everyone in the live stream, and welcome to everybody listening to this after the fact. If you want to make sure you get invited to all the live streams, it's not a paywall as such, but if you do want to make sure you get that unlisted link to all the streams, there's a $1 tier, that's the bottom tier, and then there's several tiers going up where we try and make it increasingly worth your while. But we do love your support at patreon.com/MissedApex. Because we are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. We could just hang out, Matt and I. We could. I mean, we're the best ones, arguably.
We are.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have to talk about the order of who's the outright best.
No, it's just the us of us at top.
But top 10 in the available panelists for sure is Alex Jeansy Van Gene. How's it going, Alex?
It's going all right on this just another Sunday that doesn't mean anything to anybody.
I don't need a day to tell me to love my wife. I love her all the time, no matter how loudly she chews.
Exactly. And don't ever tell her that I stole that line from Uncle Phil on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Nice. My kids are just... I just left my family watching Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, as it happens. You're annoying me a little bit because you went through a brief phase of not being very fast at iRacing. Now you're just super duper, like, alien quick again. And I'm sad by that.
I'm just off alien. Sort of. I'm enjoying it and I'm getting better. Load cell pedals help massively, as you well know, where they stay stuck down. But yeah, no, I'm enjoying my time in iRacing now, apart from this week. Okiyama was horrible. I hated it. But other than that, it's been quite good.
Wow. Here
in America was awesome.
Hopefully we'll get back on some real tarmac with some real tyres in the form of some missed Apex karting very soon. But someone who is alien pace and has been helping me with the missed Apex iRacing podcast, link in the show notes below, is racing driver Bradley Philpott. Hello, Brad.
Good evening, Spanish. It's nice to be back on a real missed Apex podcast.
Oh, right. Yeah, because we've just been having you doing the computery game versions.
Yeah, this is cool. And with all my favourite panellists as well.
Oh, there we go. In your face, Kyle and Chris and Christian and Nick and all those other guys. You have some... Oh, gosh. Do you know what? In a couple of weeks, we're going to have some really, real exciting stuff to talk about, aren't we? But nothing yet.
Yeah, it's tricky. There's some not particularly secret things, but I just don't want to annoy people by letting on just yet. And there's some hopefully more important, exciting things that I can talk about in an upcoming episode. But yeah, fingers crossed we'll get some real racing underway at some point this year and I can tell you the stories from that.
Yeah, and let's pause that for now because the last thing you would want to do is make some big announcement that you're going to make an announcement and then come up with 4 minutes of, frankly, drivel. But we're not going to go into the rich energy story yet, Matt. Not yet, I don't think.
What could you possibly be referencing there? I have no idea.
I had such a good time tweeting along with the Rich Energy saga with our account. We've got a Poor Energy. You know, that's a pretty weak parody name, but we have a lot of fun. I thought that account would be dead and parked, but no. William's story has just piped up Brad and unleashed all the fun once more.
I've just got to say, I thought your tweets on the Poor Energy account today were excellent. So if anybody's interested, go and check out that Twitter account because it was really good.
Okay, do you know what? We're going to do some legitimate Formula One news before we go around to that. And people will say, well, why are you giving William Story airtime? Because it's hilarious. That's why. But first, let's start off with some real and some genuine
big dirty news.
So everyone here at Missed Apex Podcast, I am sure will join me in wishing Fernando Alonso well. I don't know who's got any of the skinny, any of the further details on that, but we're already, Matt, looking at a possible replacement driver in Formula One, and we're quite far out from the start of the season, but poor old Fernando Alonso ends up getting hit by a car whilst road cycling.
Yeah, it was quite the sacrifice to make so that we'd have something to speculate about on today's show. I do have to say thanks to him for doing that. But as it turns out, he was cycling in Switzerland by a row of parked cars, and he, based on the police reconstruction, struck the right side of a car that was turning left into a supermarket car park, or, you know, a parking lot, as we like to call them, over here. And wound up breaking his jaw, had to have surgery. Now, the interesting thing here is that he didn't break, which is what I think everybody thought at first. Everybody thought he broke his jaw and would be wired shut.
Yeah.
But he actually, it was his upper jaw instead of his lower jaw. That detail I didn't miss. And he had a surgery. But the team has gone on to say that they expect him to be functional by time they get to testing, which may or may not be true, so we can use it to speculate on who might replace him anyway, because happily enough, Alpine has no reserve driver, and there's word that Hülkenberg, who you might think would be at the top of the list, has been in talks with Aston Martin. So we can just go to town on this one.
Yeah, well, yeah, we can do. But it, I mean, to be honest, it sounds like he's going to make it back. But I mean, a lot of the F1 drivers are into road cycling. You know, you had Jenson Button famously into it, Valtteri Bottas. I think that's to do with his partner as well. Well, I don't know, but his partner is also like a top level cyclist. Now, you did some pretty high level cycling, and I did road cycling recreationally for fitness. And oh my God, I stopped because you are taking a risk every single time you go out there and train. And for Alonso, imagine missing Formula One races because somebody turned into a supermarket car park badly.
Yeah, well, I'm not even sure they turned in badly. I think it was an issue where he was screened by parked cars or by non-moving cars, and the person turned, and by the time he saw the car, he couldn't stop the bike. This actually happened to me once while I was training. I was training with a partner of mine. We followed a car onto a side road, and we were going, you know, our usual pace, 40-ish kilometers an hour, 35, 40 kilometers an hour, and the car stopped in the middle of the road to get their mail out the mailbox. And the guy who was in front of me couldn't get his bike stopped in time, smashed into the back of their car. And then they got out and started yelling at him. And we're like, you stopped in the middle of a road.
40 miles an hour, still faster than his 2015 Honda-powered McLaren. But yeah, anyway, so we wish him well. That's just a quick news story. But probably the biggest news so far to come out this week has been the engine freeze that we were talking about last week. And so the vote went through on the 11th with Red Bull seeking to have an engine freeze. And that has actually been, that's been agreed now. So it's definitely happening.
Yeah, it has been agreed. The interesting detail about this is that, you know, we speculated a lot about the balance of performance last week. Would it be fuel flow? Would it be development opened up? Apparently there is no mechanism right now for anyone to catch up at all. It's just going to be a freeze from 2022 onwards. And there was lots of back and forth amongst the different teams about who was in favor of it, when, and under what circumstances.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so that means that if a team doesn't catch up by the end of 2022, we're in the same situation. We're going to end up going to have 3 years where there's a baked-in engine advantage. I'm not sure that's what anyone wanted apart from Red Bull. How did they manage to get that pushed through, do you think?
I think because the deal had to be done for Red Bull to stay in the sport. And at the end of the day, as selfish as Formula One teams are, if you're Mercedes, do you want Red Bull walking off? And if you're Renault, do you want Mercedes walking off and then you win? No, you really don't.
But see, Alex, you know, we've mocked the annual who's going to threaten to leave Ferrari or Red Bull. But at the end of the day, they've got four cars. They've got power in the sport.
Oh, they've got the sport by the proverbial, really. I'm surprised that they actually let them do it and have that much power, because it gives them such a massive percentage of the grid that they can go, well, we'll just take it all with us. Because losing one team would be bad, but manageable, and would be, and you'd probably get that one team taken over. Like, for example, when Force India went down, you know, someone came in quite quickly and took them over. If AlphaTauri went down, someone would come in and quite quickly take that over. But to lose two at the same time, I don't see that kind of thing happening again, or happening twofold. So yeah, they do have power, and it's unfair power, especially when they've got the only, they're not in a big engine deal at all now. So yeah, I hope they get it sorted. It looks like it will be done. It's a lot of posturing to get it where they want it. But as I think I said last time we talked about this, I think Red Bull are actually just happy with the way the engine currently is, because they wouldn't be asking for a freeze if they thought they could develop it. So being able to develop it, or not having to develop it, means we're happy, it's reliable. Weren't they one of the most reliable engines last season, if I remember rightly? They didn't really have hardly any engines go bang last year. So what more do they want?
That's because the AlphaTauri engines went bang for them, I think. But it's interesting you bring that up, because this comes out of the larger meeting that we had. And they voted on several things, including we have more details about the sprint race. We can get to that in a minute. But they also talked about the 2025 engine specifications in more detail for the first time. And what's interesting is the engine they are talking about is going to be simple enough and inexpensive enough that Red Bull is now saying that they might choose to simply continue on and develop the engine on their own at that point, which means there might be no MGU-H, which means that it might be a larger displacement engine. We don't really know the full details, but the goal is to make it simpler and more efficient and less expensive to develop.
Maybe it's going to be a pure hydrogen or pure electric engine. I think we should have a 25-minute extended debate on that, Matt, because everyone loved that last week.
Well, hydrogen is a possibility, as Dominic Hawley stated, because we don't yet have a battery that can operate for a full Grand Prix distance and be workable within the other reference of Formula One design. But
he knows I was joking, Alex, doesn't he? He knows I was joking and to not set off down that argument path.
No, he doesn't have much. He doesn't have a sarcasm radar.
Sorry, he needs to hang around with Brits a bit more. No, we'll not fire into that debate, Matt. But the question I really did want to ask you, finally, on the engines is, because I know you'll probably want to do like a big tech show with Summers or Stuart Mitchell at some point on this, is basically who's the losers out of this? You've got to think that maybe it's Ferrari. If they can't catch up the disadvantage they had it in a year, then they're destined to another 3 years of terrible engines. And Renault, yeah. Maybe? I don't know. Alpine, sorry.
Yeah, so from a performance point of view, right now Ferrari is the odd manufacturer out because they are way down on horsepower. But we don't know what they're bringing to the table this year. What's interesting, and I think we're going to talk about it maybe a little bit later in terms of Mercedes, but I'll bring it up now, is that we already have some serious development restrictions in place on the teams, on the power unit manufacturers for the first time. Their dyno running is restricted, and they can only bring a single homologation of engine this season. So whatever they show up with at testing, they are stuck with it for the whole season this year. They're allowed to introduce reliability upgrades, but they changed the language of that. It used to say, if you need to make an upgrade for reliability, you can do it. Now it said minimal upgrades are allowed for reliability purposes. And that may not seem like a big deal, but that minimal is a pretty big word. That means like you can't go to the FIA. Oh, look, our MGUK that would run a million duty cycles now will run 1,000,010. So it's more reliable. We want to upgrade it. It's going to have to be a lot more than that for them to think about letting you make that change.
Okay, good. I definitely followed all of that, Matt, so there's no need to quiz me further. But I listen back to these shows, and I always absorb things the second time around. I listen to Tech Time at least twice. I know I joke about it, but in all seriousness, I listen to it with it in the background, and then I zone in on the areas that I wanted to really understand. So I'm not just mocking you. I had a meeting with a potential sponsor during the week, a little bit inside baseball here. And he said, do you know what? He said, that Canadian you do the podcast with, he's very good. He's very detailed. And I didn't correct him.
Good.
Went out of my way to not correct him. Yeah, it's a compliment to you guys, isn't it? It's like, that's nice to be mistaken.
You sure he wasn't talking about Carter?
Nah, Canadian resident, slightly different. All right, let's talk about some more of the racing action. I want Brad's opinion on the proposed updated sprint races. But Matt, perhaps you could give us a quick refresher on the latest on that and where we're at, and then we can decide how angry we're supposed to be about it.
Yes, well, I do love this because we had none of these details last week and we just had endless speculation.
Yeah, yeah.
And it turns out that of all the speculating, I was pretty much right. So I always love stories like that.
Yeah.
Just because I was right with my guesses. But the way it's going to work is pretty straightforward. There'll be one practice Friday, and then second practice will now become qualifying
for the race on
Saturday.
Wait, what? Is this like the latest proposal, or is this happening?
I think they've formed a working group to sort out a whole bunch of other details, which we'll get to in a minute. But this is the understanding all the major outlets have of the shape of the way it's going to go.
Okay.
Practice two becomes qualifying.
All right. So on a Friday, we're going to have a practice session and then a qualifying session. Okay.
Yep.
So what happens on Saturday?
You have your race. And the race is going to be a third of a Grand Prix, 100 kilometers.
Okay.
Which is interesting. Now, this is also, to be very clear to everyone out there who's screaming, this is only agreed to as a trial run for 1 year. And only at three races out of here.
Okay,
so they literally said, let's do an experiment and see how it works, people.
Okay. I don't mind that, because I didn't mind the experiment with the elimination thing. I think if you'd have given that a bit more legs, we could have had something there. I didn't think it was awful. So let's just finish off where we think these proposals are. So the qualifying decides the grid for Saturday. There's a 1/3 race. That's it. No further practice.
They didn't mention practice three. Okay. I don't know if they'll be allowed like a warm-up practice in the morning or not. But the race on Saturday sets the grid for Sunday.
Okay, let's get your hot take, Bradley Philpott, on this new proposed format.
Okay, so first of all, I definitely need to just make it clear. I'm not someone who would say, no, it's not broken, so you don't need to try and fix it. Just leave everything as it is. I'm not one of those people.
Yeah.
I'm happy to see change if the thing works and if there's a good reason for it and if it's well thought out. Quite often these things in Formula One don't tend to be well thought out. My view on this, just initially, having heard what Matt said there, is why they seem to think that people have an entire weekend that they can just dedicate to watching Formula One, including Friday.
Yeah.
We have a lot of Formula One weekends, obviously in a non-pandemic year, even more, but a lot of our weekends are taken up by watching this sport. And I enjoy setting aside some time to watch the race and focus on it and enjoy the main event and the qualifying as well, if I have time to watch that the day before. But it seems like there are now going to be more things that are like more important spread across the whole weekend. So you have to really, in order to follow this properly, you've got to set aside so much time. And it seems like it's going to potentially then devalue the main event on the Sunday anyway.
It makes it difficult for the casual fans. If they've only got one day to watch, what do they watch?
Alex, your voice has done that thing again. You sound so deep and so sexy. It's distracting.
Quit distracting, Spanners. So may I answer that point briefly? Normal qualifying, if you watch it, usually takes an hour. This is a third distance race. The normal Formula One race is 90 minutes. So we're talking about a 30-minute sprint race here. It's not going to be any extra TV time for you. If you watch Saturday qualifying, you get to watch a half-hour race instead of three different sessions of qualifying.
But a lot of the casual fans don't turn up for qualifying. They'll catch up with qualifying in the news and stuff afterwards and watch the main event because they haven't got that time. And the main event is a thing they want to watch. But if you've missed the sprint race, you've missed a whole massive amount of information that you can't just read from a timesheet.
Okay. Now, it's interesting that we've zoned in on the viewer experience straight away. I think that is valid, Brad. But isn't it also the case that some people who used to just tune into the race, they're not really losing anything extra because, qualifying is now essentially Saturday. So you can still watch qualifying on Saturday, which is now just in the form of a sprint race. I guess you just miss the qualifying for the qualifying, which saying it out loud makes it all start to seem a bit ridiculous, doesn't it?
Well, I was led to believe that this sprint race would actually carry points as well. Is that the case, Matt?
Well, here's the fun thing. When we get to the details, they have to work out. And I do want to stick a pin in the idea that I wanted to hear your opinion as a driver, as a competitive driver. If you would like this format better than the format that currently existed in Formula One. So, and it may be for different teams, you might have different opinions about it, but I want you to think about it from I'm a driver in a race, and now suddenly I have to race for my big race instead of single lap elimination qualifying, sort of what goes on now. They are talking about prize money. They are talking about points. So one suggestion is points might be a third. So you might see an 8-6-5-4-2-1. For the top people, or you might use an older system that goes to the top eight. The working group is going to decide the details of how that's going to be handled this season. It's also going to decide things like if you win the Friday qualifying, are you the pole sitter? Or if you win the Saturday race, are you the pole sitter? Or if you win the Saturday race, are you a race winner? Because that's going to matter to driver contracts because they get paid differently depending upon different results they turn up. So it's kind of interesting that way.
Okay, so my view really does depend a lot on what the final format becomes. Because if it really is a Friday qualifying, which sets the grid for a qualifying race, and the result of which sets the grid for the main race on the Sunday, then it kind of seems to me like all you're doing is giving the guys in the faster cars just more chance and more time to make their way to the front. So if you didn't qualify on pole and you're in a Mercedes on the Friday, then you'll be on pole by the time you get to the Sunday race for definite. Everyone is going to naturally move further towards their
correct part of the grid. Barring a disaster, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a little bit less randomness in terms of the grid positions for the main race, if that's the way it works. If it's just a totally standalone race, I just really don't like the concept, because it seems to me that it's just diluting the weekend and making it confusing for everyone. And I just, again, why? What's the reason for doing this? If you were there at the weekend, if you were a fan at the track, I'd say, okay, cool, we're getting to see another race. Like if it was Formula 2 and you've got the two races over the weekend, there's more stuff to watch and it's more exciting. But the vast majority of people consuming this are not at the track. And obviously this past year and this coming year, probably not that many people will be at the track again. So you're kind of changing the format and doing a fundamental major weekend change for not many people's benefit anyway.
Mark Greenow in the live chat says, surely only the saddest of the sad watch Friday practice, Saturday qualifying and the race on Sunday. Nobody here would spend that much time thinking about F1. The ... makes it seem like he's being ironic, but I still feel seen and hurt by that comment. Jeansy, I think Brad's got a good point in that, what problem are we trying to solve?
To be fair, Stuart Bycollis in the chat has got it spot on, which is actually, it better not affect the poor supercut races, because you all know the gold that those things are. But no, seriously, my issue as well is, you spend your junior career doing sprint races. There's lots of, it seems like a very junior thing. It's a grassroots build-up thing. And then you get to the big show, and you get to the big show and you do the big race. It screams gimmick to me, of an extra way of just trying to boost a little bit of ratings. It's nothing to do with the racing. It's nothing to do with what Formula One is supposed to be about, which is excellence and the best winning. That's what Formula One is about. Unfortunately, when a media company takes it over, there does have to be a show for them.
It's Americans,
as far as
sports
concerned, it doesn't need it.
Americans, America, doing America things. Brad first, then Matt.
Just very briefly, this particular potential change just strikes me as change for change's sake. I just can't see a positive to it, really, or a real reason for it.
So I'm going to note that you still haven't answered the question, as a driver, would you be in favor of it or not? But before we...
Let him answer it.
Fine. Yeah, so I answered it without explicitly stating it in my last answer, which is that if you're in a good team, then you'll like it, because it means if you've screwed up qualifying, you've got longer to get to the front for the main race. If you're in a worse team, then you're going to qualify at the back, and you're going to be at the back in the short race in the same way that you'd be at the back in the long race. And I don't think it really makes that much difference. Maybe you can take more risks, but if you've only got 24 hours or less than that to rebuild the car for the next day, maybe you won't take more risks. So really, what does it change?
Okay, I'm going to make the case for the defense that I think I've just come up with here, is that the qualifying formats are good when they can introduce some random element. So there has to be the potential for things to go wrong in qualifying. If you just give all the teams an hour to just go out and do the best they can and have infinite laps to go and set a time, you'll pretty much always get the fastest team with the fastest time. And that used to happen. And then we got to the stage where nobody qualified until the last 5 minutes of qualifying. I don't know if anyone remembers back to those days, because it was like no one wanted to lay down rubber for anyone else. And what was the point? But you would get quite predictable grids back then, if I'm remembering rightly. So I think the defense for this is that a sprint race, Matt, is chaos. A sprint race is aggressive. People have got a short amount of time to just go and fight for that grid spot. And you want the likes of who's a wild midfield driver, Ocon, just some French wild card chancer coming through the pack that might just go and just ding Bottas's rear wing. He goes down the pack, and that's mixed up the deck for Sunday.
Okay, so you are on the track that I am thinking about. And so I did some digging. I didn't have enough time to do all the digging I wanted. I wanted to do two things. I wanted to go to the three races and look at where everybody was when the race would have finished.
Okay.
And then I also wanted to look at pit stops and how long the races were, because there's no mention of pit stops having to be made here. But in Monza, last race at Monza, roughly 18 laps would give you that 100-kilometer distance, and both Leclerc and Latifi wound up making a pit stop before then. last race in Brazil, which would be about 24 laps, Ricardo, Perez, Hamilton, Giovinazzi, Kubica, Verstappen, Raikkonen, Gasly, Fiat, and Russell all made stops before that distance. And in Canada, obviously both Brazil and Canada go back to 2019 because we didn't race there last year. It's about 23 laps, and although we did have some incidents, we had Albon, Sainz, Raikkonen, Gasly, Ricciardo, Kubica, Russell, Perez, Kvyat, and Hülkenberg all making stops before the end of the sprint race. So what's going to happen in qualifying is you're going to have to choose, do I qualify on a tire
that can make it
through a third distance, or do I bet that I can run a softer tire and make it last, or maybe have to make a pit stop, and if I make that stop and can't make up the time, I'm doomed. And the start, think about the start of the last race. Where did Bottas fall to? Like 10th place?
Yeah, and do you have
to... He didn't get all the way back up there. And that's what I'm saying.
Do you have to start on the tyre that you finished the qualifying race on? So there's loads of possibilities. Vangeen.
Also, the thing with tyre wear, you've got to remember they'll be running on a third of the amount of fuel. So the tyre wear actually won't be as bad because they're running on a lot less fuel. And they'll just run the harder tyre. There's no way they'll risk making a... if a tyre is limited to getting into the race, they won't risk it and they'll go on a hard tyre and push the whole way.
I don't know. So I still think there's some interest in there. And I think what we mustn't do is be close-minded, Matt. You know, we don't know. There's so many unknowns that there could be just some factor like what you've mentioned there that just makes it the most incredible fun and does it make the Sunday race better? That's the most important thing for me.
Yeah, well, is it fun to watch? Does it make the race better? And think about it. If championship points are being awarded, does it change the calculus of the championship over the whole season to have extra places where I can lose or pick up points on my rivals? All these things remain to be seen. But as I said, this is an experiment, and I'm delighted they're going to run it and get some actual results before they make up their mind for good.
Yeah, we mustn't shoot people down for like trying a thing, although I do think Brad's point is valid of like, well, what problem is it that we're trying to solve? So from my preference point of view, and I wonder if anyone disagrees with this, if this is going ahead as we think, I think a race win in the qualifying race should not count as a Grand Prix win. But the pole issue, that's a little bit different. I think you've got to make Friday qualifying the pole if those things matter to you, you know, in the statistics of Formula One. But it is a major change. It's a major departure in the spirit and the soul of F1. I'm not objecting to it, but I'm just saying it's not a light change that we're embarking on. All right, good. I think we've wrapped that up in a neat bow, Matt.
I would agree.
All right, it's good. Well, I would do like some neat segue to the next topic. It's just that then you'll go, no, I have 17 more salient points on not only the sprint format, but also the engine freeze. So I was just checking in. What'd you reckon?
We could talk more about the engine regulations that are coming up.
Nah, we're all right. I'm fine.
I spent hours trolling. did you know where they buried the power unit homologation regulations and the technical regulations? Appendix 10.
I was going to say, you're going to tell
Appendix
me, aren't you?
10.
But then you did. Appendix 10. Great. I'm going to play a bumper, then we definitely have to move on. Because you would never interrupt a bumper to go back to a previous topic. Why don't we talk about Mercedes, Matt? Let's turn our attention to the champs. And we've not actually spoken about them much of recent weeks. And I sort of deliberately stayed away, I think, from Hamilton speculation because I felt like the news was going to drop any moment. And I'm glad we didn't spend time talking about it last week because it came out like Monday morning. I'm like, curse you, Mercedes, waiting for our episode to drop. But the news is out. Lewis Hamilton has signed a one-year deal as far as we know. So let's go to our kind of most outwardly Hamfosi, Alex Jeansy Van Gene. I know that you're really happy because this is an opportunity now. At least we know that Hamilton is going to get the chance to fight for an eighth world title. But I do want to just say that I never thought it was in doubt that he'd been racing this year. And if you ever feel down on yourself or are doubting yourself, just remember that there are people out there who seriously thought Mercedes might drop a seven-time world champion for an undoubtedly talented but unproven George Russell. It was never going to happen, was it, Jeansy? He was always going to race this year.
It was always going to happen. It's more funny the guys who thought it was just because he was asking for a lot of money. But then you actually look at other top flight sportsmen who are actually earning more than Lewis. I think Lewis, as far as contract basis goes, isn't even in the top 10 in the world of highest contracts. And Mercedes have said multiple times they make the money back on his contract almost instantly just by having him on board. So money was never the issue. What it turns out, the sticking points was all the foundations and good things he wants to do. So the things that slowed it all down was him trying to be nice to the rest of the world and continuing his legacy with Mercedes once he finishes racing.
Alex, we do not want Formula One drivers banging on about issues. We just want them to drive unless they're Vettel and doing the stuff with the, you know, diversity for LBGT or Norris with the mental health stuff. That's all fine. But apart from that, we don't want drivers banging on about their issues.
I'm just happy we're going to get to see him go down. We're going to get to see Sir Lewis Hamilton go down the Lewis Hamilton straight at Silverstone. That I'm looking forward to.
God, you're really going full Hamfosi. You're not even pretending.
No, not pretending. But no, the thing is, I think what it will do is the reason he's gone for like the year's contract, which lots of people are really super surprised about.
I think I was. Tell me why shouldn't I be surprised?
There's a whole new regulation set next year. He's coming to the end of his career. You know, whether he's over the brow with regards to his ability or not, we don't know.
He's probably on it, isn't he? He's there or thereabouts.
He's clinging on. He's clinging on.
He can still see the top. It's in his wing mirror. Like, it's just there.
Well, you could see that, you know, he still hadn't fully recovered quite quickly from the effects of COVID for the last race. And he's definitely still very, very ill.
Yeah, he's kind of old.
He probably thinks if he was younger, he probably would have recovered from that quicker. But it's that case of, I think what he's going to do is he's going to look at next year's car halfway through the season and be like, okay, I want to drive that car, or okay, I don't want to drive that car.
I was just thinking whilst you were talking there, Alex, that I think in terms of Hamilton's ability, there is so much linked to how much you've previously achieved and then how much effort you are willing to put in. I don't think he's actually lost any speed or is at a point where he couldn't be. Say he'd never won a title at this point, I think he'd be just as quick as he's ever been and he would be so hungry for it. But when you're already the best that there has ever been statistically, you know, and you believe that inside, and you know, you're on the verge of being completely, you know, ahead of everyone if you get your next title, I think it's going to be difficult for him to maintain that hunger into a whole new regulation set when you've got so many very fast young chargers who still do have that hunger because he's kept them away from a title for the last few years.
Especially because if he turns up in 2022, doesn't really do very well, Mercedes don't hit the ground running with a really good car, and Max Verstappen takes the title, and then he retires, he'll look like he's run away.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I will sympathize, surprise, surprise, with Lewis Hamilton in a way, because like Brad is saying, he's 35? So, you know, for a top level athlete, he's 36. Yeah, that's real old. Like, for a top level athlete, no offense to Brad, that's a perfectly good age for a GT driver though, isn't it? That's still...
Yeah, it's young for a GT driver.
Okay, so you're still...
It's 20 years older than that.
Is that right? Okay, well, that's good then. But for Lewis, in a way, he saw off his generation. Pretty much. He saw off the guys that he came through with, that he was competing with. He positioned himself, you know, with the best car a lot of the time. He beat his main rival at the time, which was Sebastian Vettel at Ferrari. He beat off Rosberg He beat him off. That's a perfectly valid. Stop it. Stop, everyone. Stop. That's a perfectly fine phrase to say. He beat him to 3 titles out of 1. What, Alex, what should I have said instead?
Alonso?
Yes, Alonso as well.
In his first season.
So he's proved himself against that generation of Formula One drivers. There was a lot of speculation that he had a veto on the teammate. Well, the fact that he only had a year's contract and that Bottas already had a contract for that year kind of completely dismisses any notion that he was ever going to get a veto on his teammate. And Mercedes flat out said, no, team driver selection is a team matter. But I wouldn't blame him for, at this stage in his career, wanting a little bit of control within the team. Because in a way, Brad, isn't it a little, like, it's daunting if you're an older driver to go, what, am I going to let some real young upstart come in here, he's earned nothing, he's done nothing, he's proved nothing, come and mug me for a season and diminish my legacy a little bit? I think you're perfectly entitled at that point to go, do you know, I can protect myself a bit, even though it's not really turned out to be true.
Yeah, you've spent a decade and a half nearly like building this reputation and record of success. And then in one season, which could, you know, could just be an anomalous season where things just don't go your way. Or like I was saying before, the other driver is just a bit more hungry and just pushes that bit harder in the preparation or whatever, it could all kind of look a bit tainted at the end. And so I do tend to agree with Alex that I think maybe if Lewis tries the 2022 car and doesn't particularly gel with it, or just doesn't really feel the fire that he really wants to continue into this next era, or he gets a hint that maybe another team might potentially threaten Mercedes dominance in 2022, I think maybe he will take that opportunity to call it a day. I don't think he feels desperate to stay anymore. I think once you've become the best of all time and everybody can see that, you really only have things to lose at that point by continuing, unless you really, really want to. And I don't see that in Hamilton.
So we know that he set up a organization, I think, with Mercedes. Like a lot of this delay was they're setting up some outside organizations to work on things. Charities. But I want to second what Brad is saying. In terms of being as dominant and as good as you are, he shows up, he gets in the car, he's fastest, he wins most of the races, he wins the championship. It looks really easy on television. But coming from music, where, you know, you could play something for someone, they're like, oh, wow, that sounds really great. That looks like it's so easy for you. And you think, well, yeah, it is easy. Once you discount the fact that I've trained to do this since I was about 10 years old and I spend multiple hours a day trying to get slightly better at it, even now at my advanced and mostly decrepit age. And you are absolutely right. To be the best in the world at something takes a level of dedication, discipline, and focus that is, it's hard to express. Even, you know, and I've just like touched the suborbital capacity of where he is. And so, yeah, he really might be at the end of what he thinks himself capable of at this point.
I also think Lewis Hamilton is viewed and treated differently to other drivers. He is a divisive character. For whatever reason you want to say, it is just true. He comes under a lot more criticism even than Schumacher did in his time, which there was a fair amount of anti-Schumacher sentiment. Sorry for my part in that. But they were the big bad. They were the Death Star. I know we've got some Schumacher fans on the panel. I think Kyle is a big Schumacher fan. But for Hamilton, the stakes are slightly higher when it comes to legacy. So if he does come along and have some young buck come and beat him in his last season and then he retires, that will absolutely be used by people to say, that is proof that it was all along, it was just the best car. Even though, you know, he won two of those titles with a good teammate in his car, even though he won against Vettel with that very competitive Ferrari. That's what people will say. And I don't think anyone would have done that at the end of the Schumacher era or other great champions. Just because they lost one season, it denigrates their whole career. But there is the potential for that with Hamilton. So I think Hamilton's got a few more factors to consider. But Matt, from a contract point of view, it looks like it is a year with a year's option. I'm not an expert in legal things, but what I see that as is a... No, hang on. We're speculating that it's a year with a year option. That is what was widely rumored and speculated. If it is that, then what it really is, it's a two-year contract. It's really a two-year contract. But both parties have a way to go out. All it means is you don't have to sit and negotiate again for that second year because there's a default. So if there's any kind of disagreement or anyone wants to change the contract and there's no agreement, you default into it's just a two-year contract. It would take Mercedes going, no, we're fed up of you, so we're not taking that option, or Hamilton retiring or taking another offer. But for all intents and purposes, it's a two-year contract.
Is there something valiant and noble about a top-level driver just trying to continue even after they're past their best, they know for sure? Like, it doesn't look good for your image. Like for Legacy. Vettel, for example, if Vettel had retired after he had won his four titles, he would have gone off, and we probably would have all been sitting here thinking, wow, if he had continued, he would still have been superb for, you know, a number of years afterwards, and we might have had a slightly higher opinion than we do of him right now, although we can put that right in the coming season maybe. But other drivers who have carried on until they have faded a bit and then bowed out knowing, okay, I'm maybe past it now. Is there something noble to that? Like, can you be brave doing that?
In other sports, I think you can. So for example, you can have someone like Teddy Sheringham, who's top level Champions League winner, England striker, came and did a season as Colchester United player manager. Right? Got paid £1 million, basically bankrupt the club and then bogged off. Cheers, Teddy. But you can do that in football and have a career in the lower leagues. It seems much more accepted. Whereas in Formula One, there's much more of a heavyweight boxer kind of attitude where you're a prize fighter. And once you get knocked off the top, once you're past your best, it seems like people are less interested. I mean, we write Formula One drivers off now, Alex, if they have like a bad season against their teammate. You go, well, they got beaten by Hulkenberg that one time, so pfft.
The difference is with something like football, it's a team sport, and you can be the older guy in a younger team and they can carry you, but it's seen that you're just losing a little bit of your pace, which is always the thing they always talk about. And then you can go, right, I've done my time now, I'll have enough. And you're right, with sports where you're on your own, it's I'm the best until I'm not the best anymore, and if I'm not the best, I'm past it.
And F1, of course, is a team sport, but we're talking about the perception in the media for Legacy. And Mike Stoner in the live chat brings up Damon Hill to Arrows. Of course, that was very much a forced move as well. And I don't, as much as we all enjoyed in Britain that Damon Hill title, I don't think anyone's putting Damon Hill up in kind of Lewis Hamilton, Vettel, Prost, Senna territory. No offence to Damon Hill. Great driver, great pundit. Alex?
I think Damon knew he was being kicked out of that team long before the end of the season and before he was even winning the title, I think, if I remember rightly from his book.
Yeah, all right. Well then, Matt. Well, there we go. That's interesting. Once again, I'm just going to confirm that we're all right, that everything's wrapped up in a neat bow. We good?
Yeah, it is. But interestingly enough, for the rest of the Mercedes story, we were fortunate enough to have, and I'm going to say this name, I think it's Howell Thomas, but it's spelled H-Y-W-E-L, so I don't really have any idea how it's pronounced. I'm just going to pronounce the name that comes closest to it that I know how to pronounce and hope that it's close enough. I did a lovely little YouTube thing. He's taken over from Andy Cowell at Bricksworth, as I'm sure you all recall, about the challenges of the new season engine. And I probably relearned, but had forgotten that not only were they going to be limited to just the one power unit homologated throughout the whole season, which is a pretty big change. So if they get it wrong, they can't just show up with the second engine having made those changes. Those changes can't be introduced. They're only going to be able to introduce in between season. But that they're actually limiting the dyno testing of the engines this season for the first time. Dyno testing is where you put the engine in a non-car and you test it for different capacities so as to help with your development. That previously was unlimited. It's now limited, and it's much like the cost cap. It's going to be a glide path down to even fewer hours. And I know you want to know, so they're allowed 9 total benches, 6,400 occupation hours, and 800 testing hours this season. And all of you stats nerds, you're welcome for those numbers. But also brought up the important issue we haven't really talked about, the fact that there's so little time between the end of last season and the beginning of this season. And he mentioned, crucially, that they have some, quote, issues, but they think they'll be sorted for the start of testing.
Excellent. Well, let's move on to a different story. Nah, I got at least one segue in because we're going to talk about William Story, who is the, I guess, CEO of Rich Energy. And you will recall that they were the title sponsor and had livery rights to Haas F1. It was a controversial tenure, and he is certainly a controversial character within Formula One. There was an acrimonious split with Haas F1, with William Story of Rich Energy claiming very much that they had sacked, he uses those words, that they had sacked Haas, and he is now looking forward to returning to F1 with lots of hashtags, Matt, hashtag comeback, hashtag entrepreneur, hashtag Valentine's Day, hashtag announcement, hashtag William Story. He hashtagged himself, hashtag William Story. And
that's a sad thing to do on Valentine's Day, hashtag yourself.
Look, hey, self-hashtagging, you know, I'm not judging. Just try hashtagging with a friend or a partner, yeah. So today he announced, they pre-announced the announcement that they were going to do a big announcement today on Twitter, 2 p.m. UK time, that this was going to be the big comeback in F1, Matt. You know, because always announcing an announcement, that's always a good idea.
I'm going to announce the announcement of my announcement shortly. Thank you for joining me. You know, the funny question that I really had after he said that he sacked Haas, because he mentioned before that he talked to Williams, my only thought was like, if he sacked Haas for poor performance, what would have happened to poor Williams? You know, I mean, think about it.
Well, this is the speculation, isn't it? Well, what if he's making a comeback, what team are they making a comeback into? So, look, I'll take them at their word. There is going to be an announcement at 2 p.m. So everyone was all excited and waiting because, I'll say it, it's a freak show in F1, isn't it? Brad, I mean, that's not harsh. I mean, you've had some run-ins with William Story on Twitter. He is a incredibly outspoken character with wild statements. And some people will say, well, why are you giving him airtime? Why are you, giving it exposure? Because I can't look away. I just can't. I can't look away. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's a train wreck. It's as kind of spoken on our WhatsApp group earlier today, our media expert, Chris, whose job it is to put out press releases for race teams and that kind of thing, was listing off the bad things
that were
incorporated into today's announcement, but anything to do with Rich Energy. And it is, like I said, just a train wreck. Every single element from the building up an announcement and then not doing it at the time you say you're going to do it, to then missing the second deadline, to then filming on a phone in portrait mode with no tripod wobbling around some rambling statement, which then by mistake, because they didn't even know Twitter had a limit on video length, then was cut off in the middle and then continued a few minutes later to say nothing at all. By the end of it, it's just every single part. It's like a parody, and I couldn't take my eyes off it because it was so entertainingly bad.
Someone in our Patreon group, Matt, suggested that William Story was perhaps a hired actor from F1, like WWE style, to like come in, like when there's nothing happening, he comes into the ring going, yeah, we're going to make a comeback.
Yeah, it reminds me of Magnum P.I., where he was just hired to play the writer instead of the guy was hired to play the writer. And it was actually the butler all along that wrote the stories and was actually the rich person. But I'll tell you what I love about it. Because if you do listen to what he said, basically what he said was, my rich friend bought an investment in a Formula One team and he's going to make me a partner. That's literally all that he said.
I don't think he even said that. I think he said, my rich friend of an undisclosed name or someone who we're closely associated with has agreed to buy it. I haven't even done it. It's all like, and we all know how quickly this kind of thing falls down in Formula One. People have an agreement and then it never comes through. It's like you're announcing that someone you know might in the future be purchasing part of a Formula One team, and they might then let you put your sticker on their car. It's just terrible.
And let us not forget that he blamed Perez for keeping him from buying India.
Yeah, that too
was a really entertaining subplot in his 5 minutes of announcement.
So I'm going to play the last minute, which was on the second video. So we'll set this up and it will come in halfway through a sentence because like the two videos were split like just mid-sentence. So as part of that rant, he was going to buy Force India, but he was basically robbed of it by Perez putting them in administration, and it was sold to Lawrence Stroll, even though him and his Russian backers, so I guess Mazepin, bid more. I'm just guessing, but probably that had bid more. And so basically saying it's terrible that Stroll was able to buy it over him. I mean, who else did he slag off, Brad? He slagged off Haas. He denigrated Williams' financial position and saying that they're solved by our friends, he said. Dorilian Capital. Yeah. And then he also obviously slated Haas and said that we had to fire them for their terrible on-track and off-track performance.
Yeah, and I just also wanted to mention that... Sorry, there are just so many elements of this that are cringe that I was having to pause the video to say, to speak to my other half and say, what? Really? When he's saying that that Stroll got the team even though he was offering less money, it's like, yeah, because he has a business plan in place and like a strategy to make the team good, as has been played out, you know, someone with proper backing, with a proper plan, and now the team is going to be a factory-backed car manufacturer.
And a history of, like, business success as well.
So it's not just about putting down, you know, a little bit more initially. They obviously analysed the proposals and found that Story had nothing of substance to keep the team going long-term, and the other parties did.
It's like, who are they going to take? A crazy bloke with... apparently some money, or a worldwide renowned business billionaire who could probably buy the sport if he wanted to.
They ran with half a season with the logo of a bicycle company that they'd stolen. Like, it's just nuts.
White bikes. Go and support White Bikes on Twitter. So I'm going to play that clip now. I think we've set it up enough. But basically, this second half is essentially is the actual announcement, if you want to call it that. And I'm being kind of generous. And after failing to actually meet the deadline for the announcement, after saying he was announcing a comeback and then missing the deadline, they came back on eventually at around 3:30 with this shaky cam footage. And I'm just going to play it because it speaks for itself. Here's the actual announcement.
Your ITV. It's actually a few hundred thousand... on Sky.
Like I said, it came in mid-sentence because they just whacked the videos in half whenever they felt like it.
The subsequent damage that has done to sponsorships has meant that there's a number of different teams, for example, McLaren have done a sale and leaseback of their Woking Technology Centre. Williams were in parlous financial problems until they were bailed out by our friends at Dorilton Capital. And obviously even Haas have now had to go for pay drivers because of their weak financial position. So I've been looking for a way in which Rich Energy can return optimally, both for us and to help the team that we're going to work with. Serendipitously, a strategic ally of Rich Energy has purchased or has agreed to purchase a majority stake in an existing team. We did explore with the new regulations actually entering our own team for 2022, which would be Rich Energy Formula One team. But a friend of ours has agreed a deal for a majority stake in a Formula One team, and we will become a partner of that team for 2021. Once that acquisition is announced, we will become the title sponsor for 2022. I'm really looking forward to competing with our competitors on track. I'll be at the first race, March the 28th in Bahrain, and I look forward to seeing you all there.
I mean, wow. Just wow, Brad.
Well, I mean, if he is at the first race, we won't see much of him because he refuses to wear a hashtag slave muzzle.
Right.
And he'll have to stay in the motorhome because he won't be allowed in the paddock due to COVID restrictions. And he doesn't really believe in the whole COVID thing. So the guy is difficult in other areas aside from non-payment of sponsorship.
Scamdemic, am I right? So we have reached out to William Story. I'm not going to sit and pretend. If he was to come on and talk to us at Missed Apex, I would love it. I would love to get his side of the story and understand what it is that I don't understand. However, we will not pretend that we're talking to him in any other capacity than people who are baffled and confused by what he said. So firstly, I doubt there was going to be a Rich Energy team. We looked into it. That could just mean I looked into it and realized I didn't have $500 million to even get me going. But the claim is so tenuous, Matt. It's almost not worth exploring, but it is. But the actual claim is a strategic ally, so my mate, is going to buy some of an F1 team. Wait. No, he's not. He's agreed to buy some of an F1 team. And if he does, then in 2022, I guess we might be a partner in that. It for pantomime in the F1 news cycle on the 14th of February, that made my day. That was so much fun. I loved it.
Well, I'm going to point out that what Brad said is actually the smartest analysis of all of this. Because when we were talking about who was going to buy Force India, Mazepin is the one who brought the
Mazepin,
court case.
Yeah.
Mazepin Sr. here brought the Mazepin, court case, yeah, and lost it. And if he's talking about being done out by that deal because Perez put them into administration, then what he's really saying is his rich friend is Mazepin. And the question is, which team exactly is he going to buy a stake in, potentially, possibly, maybe, in the future, if they announce it and it doesn't all just fall apart, and if this wasn't all just for them to get some free publicity anyway, which, in all honesty, would be kind of what most people think it is right now.
So I know Matt is going to have to bounce in a little while. We have got one topic for after when Matt goes. It's for a good reason. Are we allowed to say? Should we say? Can we say, Matt? Can we say why?
Yeah, you can totally say.
You're getting your jab. You're getting jabbed up. As an old fella, you're top of the queue, so you're going to be immune.
Yep, I am going to get my second dose of the Moderna vaccine, so I'll happily talk about that on our next Remain Indoors,
which is Thursday, 2 p.m. UK time, or available on your podcatcher of choice. So before you go, do you have time quickly to round up the story?
I do have time to round it up, and I just want to be very clear that the reason I am eligible for this is not my age, because the age is 65 and older here in New York.
Which
and I'm
is
not
your
quite
age?
There yet.
Well,
but
we
because I am a teacher, and that became a category in New York City that was moved into vaccine, because there have been people accused of line jumping. Mm-hmm. I want to be very clear that I am not taking advantage of these regulations to get my vaccine.
And we can definitely...
I really do fall into a real category.
And we can confirm that he is not independently wealthy enough to just somehow jump the queue. He's a musician.
Smart enough, quite frankly.
He's a musician, for goodness sake. So the last thing on this William story is, which team is he talking about? I think the front runner, oddly enough, is probably Haas. Do you reckon, Gene Z? It is actually basically a Russian-backed Haas hookup once again, just not with Haas. So it'd be like Rich Energy Mazepin F1 or something.
Yeah, that seems like the feasible option if Gene Haas doesn't want to continue and they're not making the money they want to make, or unless Ferrari want to drop Alpha.
Well, the thing is...
Is the only other feasible option.
Here's the thing with Alfa Romeo, I assume you're talking about, which is that Alfa Romeo are only a title sponsor, really. I mean, this is still Sauber, isn't it? That F1 team?
I believe so, but they are a title sponsor. But if Ferrari pull the Alfa Romeo money, there's no more team left. So the main candidate, ironically, is Haas, and then an outsider would be Alfa Romeo. But I think Gene Haas would do everything he possibly could to not have Rich Energy take it over.
Oh, I would agree with you. And so it does present an interesting conundrum in that you have Mazepin at Haas definitely looking for more investment. But at the same time, you absolutely have the fact that they have this history that will be very much... I mean, I could see maybe Haas selling the team off and it just becomes Mazepin's team. But if he's still going to be part of it, I think he would not want to let Richard Story within 150 million kilometers.
Well, William Story. Why have you given him my first name? William Story. You just said Richard Story.
Oh, I apologize.
You must think that me and him are exactly the
same. Because it's rich energy.
There we go. And I'm having a lot of fun tweeting along this saga with our account at Poor Energy. So thinking about it, it should have been P-O-U-R because it's a drink, but I went with P-O-O-R Energy. Go and follow us at Poor Energy on Twitter and, well, laugh along with us for as long as it lasts. Now, Matt, we're going to say goodbye to you, but the links to Matt's articles to Reddit and for the audio versions, you've basically, you and your co-conspirators at the F1 subreddit have been reading them out, and Missed Apex have provided a audio feed, audio platform for that. It's going to be fantastic. I think we've backed a winning horse here. I'm really looking forward to seeing where this develops. And follow Matt at MattPT55 as well on Twitter. Godspeed, sir, and have a good vaccination.
Thank you much, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for joining us at Missed Apex Podcast. I still have one more topic lined up. We're going to talk tyres. It's really ironic, given that Matt has gone, and we're now going to talk about tyres. It's not just because I hate Matt and want to upset him. Honestly, it's not. It's because we actually do have an out-and-out tyre specialist on the panel today. But first of all, I want to get in my normal plugs of saying come and support us at patreon.com/missedapex. I want to make clear that when I say that, you know, some of the streams are going patrons only, most of them, the vast majority are going to be completely open to everyone and be free. And all the normal episodes, race reviews, weekly stuff remains free. We're not trying to put Missed Apex behind a paywall, but we do have some perks for the patrons, which is that when we don't feel like having a big active live stream, we can have a live stream like this where we've only had 120 people drop in and it's a bit more relaxed. You'll get that at the $1 tier, and then you can have your own feed that you add to your podcast player for $2 at the $2 tier that removes any of the adverts that we put in. And at $5, that unlocks everything. You get our extra content where we do our Friday post-practice, I guess, or post-qualifying maybe this season episodes. We just put a little stream together where me, Matt, and maybe one of the panel speak in a very, very relaxed way about how we see the upcoming weekend. And we've got our Patreon Slack group as well, which you can come and join us out. patreon.com/missedapex. The link is in the show notes below. Click that. And if you're on YouTube, click like and subscribe. Do all of those things. All right. I told you we have a tyre expert. It's not Van Jean. Sorry about that. It is Brad Philpott. Brad, as well as being a super duper racy driver guy, you are professionally, like a professional tyre tester. Tyre companies turn to you to say, we've made this tyre, is it good? And you go, yeah, it's all right, I guess. But like, I've seen some crazy stuff with you at work, like skidding around snow tracks, skidding around icy warehouses. Your job does seem very fun.
Yeah, so my normal day job, yeah, every day I'm out on a test track driving on different types of tyre, comparing them to a control tyre most of the time, and writing assessments of how they performed in all different areas in a very similar way to how I would relate back to engineers on a race test day.
Right.
Because although we're talking about road tyres the vast majority of the time, they still perform, or they're judged on their performance over a lap quite often. So although we do lots of objective, you know, yeah, test with sensors and things on the car for braking distances, we still test the grip level and the balance, the transient balance and all that kind of thing by driving them as fast as possible around a dry track and a wet track.
So are all the people doing your job for various companies around the world, do they look to race drivers to do that kind of work?
Specific job. So that kind of subjective handling assessment driver, yes. You need to be a very competent track driver and hopefully high level race driver in order to have the confidence that what they were saying was definitely worth listening to. And just as an example, I'm our European test driver for the company I work for. In the US, the guy who does the same job as me is a former Indy Pro driver, someone on the ladder to IndyCar. So yeah, for this particular job, that's generally the background of people. And then you learn a lot more skills once you're in the job, because you have to learn a bit more about, you know, the building of the tires and what goes into the development of them and all the different things that make a tire good or bad in different situations.
So what would be the difference between like yourself and our good friend Alex Van Gene here, who's a very good racer. And Alex, you talk about when you're karting, like you are very much a bum feel driver. And that's why like you rate kind of your karting, you rate yourself as a better karter than a sim racer, for example, because you drive through your butt.
Basically, in a kart, I am literally on the limit as much as I can be through as much of the lap as possible, because I can feel the grip. And that's where me and sim racing don't quite mix, because there's a bit of a disconnect. And however, I have learned of a device that you can put under your butt and it rumbles in all four corners. So I'm going to try and figure out where they come from and get one of them.
Okay, so what you're telling me is that you want a vibration device for your butt for your leisure time. Yeah. Okay, good.
Just hope my wife doesn't find out.
I'm not judging. But my question to you, Brad, would be, where do you differ from someone who's a very good top-level karter like Alex Van Gene? What gives you the edge when it comes to tyre testing?
So I have no doubt that if we had two different sets of tyres that looked the same and to all intents and purposes were basically the same tyre with the same branding on the side, if I gave both of those sets to Alex and told him to go off for 20 minutes and set some laps, he would probably come back with two sets of lap times and have the best lap time set on the better set of tyres. But the difference is I have three laps to assess the tyre, give a very definite opinion on it, write a very detailed report on all of the traits of that tyre in each of the different types of corner, and be fully confident that I extracted the maximum from that immediately with no time wasted. Because obviously, if you take, say, four or five or six laps to get up to speed and really get a feel for this particular tyre, the temperature has completely changed. The surface of the tyre has completely changed. It's too late. You need to be able to judge the tyre in identical conditions to the next set, which means on the same lap, you have to be completely confident that you have extracted everything from it and you can confidently talk about the traits of it. Without wanting to denigrate Alex in any way, I think you probably agree that having not been a high-level race driver and spent years and years and years sat in race cars doing that kind of thing every day, he probably wouldn't be confident to do that specific job. And that would be the same for most, I'd say, track drivers, whether it's a hobby kind of track driver or maybe like a club-level race driver.
And the reason that I'm introducing that, apart from the fact that I do find that, you know, fascinating, I would never have thought before meeting you, to be honest, that there was some dude going and thrashing our road tyres to like assess them for safety and performance. I always find it a little bit weird that road cars are ever assessed on performance, but I'm sure like, you know, there are people out there who are like, oh, to get to Tesco's, I need the absolute best like grip on my, well, you're one of them. You're one of them. You have an unnecessarily amazing road car.
It's not really, that isn't why we do these kind of tests. I'm not testing a kind of standard premium road tire to see if it's the best on track because people care about that. It's because the situations where you need absolute peak level grip are the emergency situations when you have to swerve around something at the last minute. That's when in an instant, suddenly you're asking the maximum performance from that tire. You're not driving it on a track, but you're putting it through that similar scenario where you need immediate grip and balance and not too much of one thing or another, you know, understeer, oversteer, you need response, all that kind of thing. You're not really driving it in a track situation, but you need it to do its job as best as possible. And the magazines who rate various tires, they do all these same kind of tests as we do. So your tire will sell better if it performs better in those areas. And obviously it goes through a heck of a lot more tests than those kind of things I'm doing. There are lots of other safety tests that go on as well.
So you should like join Matt for like tire specials when he's going off on one about like F1 tires and stuff. Does what you do give you a better understanding of what F1 drivers and like the Pirelli tire situation go through? I mean, you also drive in race series and understand the effects that has on lap time and competitiveness.
Yeah, I'd like to think it gives me a broader understanding, even though the materials going into the tyre do sometimes vary and they're quite different in a race tyre. But we have a racing division in the company I work for, and there is some kind of bleed over of technology and concepts. So it's quite interesting when the race guys and the road tyre guys get together for a meeting. I always enjoy those.
So I've got lost in what you were talking about, if I'm honest, Brad, which is a testament to how interesting you made that. But what I wanted to talk about actually was groove tyres in F1. And this is just a random conversation you and I had during the week where you said you wanted to sit and tell me about how why groove tires were bad. And I was a little surprised. I mean, let's find out where Jeansy sits on that as well, because I've always said I like taking away some of the tools that Formula One drivers had. And I always felt that groove tires was one of those weapons that we had to take away grip from F1 drivers. So I was like, yeah, groove tires, brilliant. Yeah, make it harder. Make it so you've got less grip. Where do you stand on that?
I never liked the groove tires. I thought they looked rubbish for an absolute start. Racing cars have slick tires. That's the way it should have been. And we had it for a really long time. I think it's 11 years or something we had groove tires for.
Yeah, it was ages, yeah.
It seems like a really... Someone thought, oh, why don't we just lob off a load of the rubber rather than actually thinking of an intelligent way to make the car slower. And we ended up with these atrocious groove tires that nobody liked.
So the thing that annoyed me, it was two fronts. So first of all, having groove tires in Formula One for dry weather, it gave the general public this really annoying view that grooves in tires give you more grip, which is just obviously the opposite of what's true, unless you're talking about an off-road tire and you're talking about knobbly tires, or you're in the wet and you're trying to disperse water.
Yeah, because if F1 has it, then it must be brilliant.
Precisely. So I was having arguments with people when I was kind of college age where they were saying, well, no, of course grooves in a road tire give you more grip, because why would Formula One have it if it didn't make it better? And I'd always be saying, no, but they wanted to slow the cars down. And the person would say, yes, it helps you slow the car down. It gives you more grip. And I'd say, no, I mean, they needed them to have less grip in the corners. So they took away some of the rubber that would have been touching the floor. And they would then say, well, surely that's ridiculous. They want to make it safer. You give it more grip, not less grip. And I would be absolutely crying with frustration. But anyway, so that's the first reason it was annoying. The second reason was, if you want there to be less contact patch, if you want there to be less surface area on the floor, why not just make the tires narrower and not have grooves? Why cut away parts of the tread that are already there? Anyway, it annoyed me because it seemed so artificial and I thought it looked a bit rubbish.
Okay, so let's talk about then the actual effect that the groove tires had. So firstly, was the idea correct that we wanted tires that gave drivers less grip? It was solving a problem, which is that the cars were on rails. I mean, you could argue Paul de Resta, certainly. The Mercedes is on rails right now. We've definitely got that now. Did it solve that problem? Did it stop F1 cars being on rails? Did it work?
Yeah, so essentially, I think the main reason behind it was the apex speeds, the cornering speeds were so high that if something went wrong in the corner, the runoff areas weren't large enough to stop the driver hitting the barrier at a high speed, and the crashes would be more dangerous because you were going through the corners more quickly. So to take away some of that grip, they removed some of the surface area of the tire by putting in these grooves. And I don't know exactly how many centimeters it was, but just as a rough guess, maybe if you add each of them up, is it maybe 10 or 15 centimeters worth of groove, maybe slightly less. But anyway, that much less rubber touching the floor means you've got significantly less grip, because that's quite a lot of missing contact patch, and therefore they were slower.
I'm taking this from the chat, and I'm taking it from Carl Power, because I generally agree with him anyway on most things with this kind of stuff. He says, they took the wrong tool away. Mechanical grip is king for good racing, and he's completely right.
Okay, Brad, help us with... I mean, in fact, Alex, help us with that. What do you mean? What do you mean by mechanical grip?
So you get aerodynamic grip, which is obviously the air passing over the car, which pushes the car to the ground, which creates the car to stick to the ground. The mechanical grip is things like the tires and the suspension that move with the mechanics of the car to bring more grip. And you can take aero grip away and they've just got less overall downforce, but giving them less grip on the surface of the tire means things like overtaking is more difficult because you've got less to play with when you're on the limits.
You agree with that, Brad?
Yeah, exactly. We've had this has been kind of a topic of conversation for decades now, but yeah, we kind of, for better racing, we want more mechanical grip or a higher proportion of the grip to come from the tires touching the ground and less of it from the aero, because you're affected so badly following other cars. Whereas if that grip is generated from the tires, then that isn't a problem. Being near another car doesn't really affect you. I agree with Kyle as well, that it was the wrong answer to that particular problem.
Okay, but at the time, didn't it didn't it kind of solve the issue they had? I've long felt, and this is a completely outsider point of view, I've long felt that there is political reasons for maintaining the amount of aero in F1. There seems to be a political will to maintain being really efficient in a wind tunnel as a industry. And you have to remember that Formula One is really linked, Alex, with, for example, the defense industry. A lot of people who work in Formula One will end up working in aerospace and stuff like that. So it feels like there was some other drivers for maintaining aerodynamics, and they were desperately searching around for something else to hobble. And the thing they could go for was the tires.
The tire companies obviously agreed to it, because I think I do remember at the time, I don't know whether it's Michelin or Bridgestone, saying that it did help them make this connection between their road tires and their race tires in the public's eyes, which is the thing that I was saying annoyed me.
Road relevant, Alex.
With regards to the aero thing, I think a lot of it's got to do with when aero came in, teams developed, teams spent so much on their aero departments that the aero departments are such a massive part of the business now.
Yes.
That stripping them away is a massive part of their business that's taken away. Also, this might be more me thinking it and a bit controversial, I think it's got a lot to do with Adrian Newey. I think people love Adrian Newey in the sport. He's Mr. Aerodynamics, regardless of how good or bad that Red Bull's been aerodynamically the last few years. He constantly complains about the aero regulations being too limiting. And I think that's something, because he's got quite a lot of weight in that area, I think it leans quite hard on that. And it's a complete business model change to move away from aerodynamics.
Yeah, and sports do it all the time. They manipulate the rules to suit their superstars. So I don't know anything about American football, but the only name I know is Tom Brady. So I gather with football, they would never change the rules to make the quarterback irrelevant, because that seems to be, you know, the big star. And in football, the keepers are underrated, for example. So would they change the size of the goalpost to be bigger or smaller? And in F1, we have a lot more fluid regulations. So if the aero department are the superstars and are the political heavyweights, then that's why they will look around for different tools. And we end up with a kind of, I guess it would be seen that era, Brad, as somewhat of an anomaly within Formula One, that we ended up with very high downforce cars with just random bits of the tyre stripped away. If we had gone for like 1950s style narrow wheels, would that have been a better path? Would that have stuck around? Would that have survived for longer?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, the other option is just make tires that have less grip. You don't have to take away portions of the surface. You can just make the tires harder. That's another thing that's just a bit strange. You know, we've kind of, with the Pirelli era, where we've got a single manufacturer, we have achieved kind of that goal. I guess I've answered my own question there. Probably the reason they couldn't do that is because we had a tire war at the time, and you couldn't tell the tire manufacturers to make the tires have less grip, because then they wouldn't be as good as the other tire manufacturer. And we actually saw them going to the lengths that they would deliberately run the tires down to zero grooves in order to have a bigger contact patch again. So it was kind of deliberately wearing the tires down. And there was all sorts of other kind of tricks that they were doing with squarer shoulders and that kind of thing. So yeah, I think the tire war maybe was playing a bigger factor than I was thinking.
So are you telling me, in the end, my long-running desire to go back to groove tyres has been misplaced? That's what I'm hearing, Brad. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, they're rubbish.
Has this whole conversation come around because we saw Alonso driving his old Renault with them on Abu Dhabi? Is that the reason this conversation's come about? Because I haven't heard about groove tyres. He had them on, didn't he?
He had slicks.
No, I'm pretty sure he was running modern Pirelli slicks. That's why it looked a bit weird.
The Abu Dhabi wasn't the first time he went out in it, though, was it? I think he went out in it before. I might be wrong, but I swear I heard them talking about the groove tyres. They might have been saying because they weren't on it, but I never
saw the footage. So actually, that's not the reason. The reason we're having this conversation is because Brad just flew in the face of common decency and actually just phone-called me randomly in the middle of the day, which I have to say I found very jarring, alarming, and intrusive. As much as I like you, Brad, phone calls are weird. Don't call people.
Considering me and Brad talk like two or three times a week, you're the one who's out of the norm here.
I know. No,
I do check myself when I'm about to call you Spanners. I do think, oh, I know he thinks this is weird, but he did also say that we should keep in touch during lockdown. So maybe I'll just do it anyway.
I have changed my mind during lockdown to some extent. It was lovely to hear from you. And I have said, and I know this is not F1 or motorsport related, but in these very difficult times, you know, the people that are struggling, pick up the phone, call them, order a random rose to your aunt and get it delivered and say, I'm just thinking about you. All those little things. But when we return back to normal free society in the post-COVID era, just message me, guys. I will get back to you in my good time, because phone calls are needy in anything but a pandemic. Wow, a tire chat that I enjoyed. We should draw no further conclusions from that. We are going to get out of here, but we have one award to give.
Comment of the week.
I remembered comment of the week and Matt had to leave. Could it be that me forgetting comment of the week isn't my fault at all somehow, but is in fact Matt's fault? Yes, let's conclude that. Before we get there, follow Brad at Bradley Philpott. You go by Bradley. That's like your grown-up name.
Yeah, so I've changed all the display names to Brad, because it sounds cooler and younger. As I get older, I have to try and come across cooler and younger. But yeah, I can't change the actual handle. It's at Bradley Philpott.
Okay, that's cool. Well, Bradley is... The thing is, Brad, he's like a skater dude. You know, he's like into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Bradley
wears
is a grown-up.
Baseball cap in
the house. Exactly, yeah. Bradley is a grown-up that you should follow and respect. But you have your streams are going really well. Like, I'm really impressed with how your iRacing streams have come on. They're well worth watching if you want an insight into how a racing driver goes about his business while racing. And it's something you could never do in the real world. So it's a treat to watch you do that on your iRacing streams.
So YouTube is the channel that I really, it's the social media outlet that I enjoy the most, I care about the most. So just search for my name, just search for Brad Philpott or Bradley Philpott on YouTube. And I have a big stream coming up this weekend, the next round of the Digital Nürburgring Endurance Series. So looking forward to that.
Do tune in for that. Also, Brad has been involved in the VCO sim races, which have involved the likes of Roman Grosjean, Max Verstappen, and a bunch of stars from other motorsport series that if you enjoy them, chances are you will recognize drivers from the series. A lot of W Series drivers, GT drivers as well. So definitely great value, and some of the top sim drivers in the world as well. Alex Van Gene, first to ask you, how do you search for Brad's YouTube channel? Do you search Bradley Philpott YouTube, or what do you do?
I search Brad Dude 2K.
Right.
That's the quickest way to find it, because that's the actual name of his channel.
That's what I do as well. So I was just checking that you did the same. But actually, your streams are entertaining in a completely different way. You're a lovable, likeable chap, and I want people to go and search Alex Van Gene on YouTube. You not only do racing streams, but like just general gaming streams as well.
Yeah, my racing streams are generally a little bit more peril than Brad's are. I'm usually in some sort of fracas in the middle of the pack. So where Brad's is almost a show of how you should do it when you're out there on your own, mine's a case of the actual realness of what iRacing is generally about, especially in Formula 3. And then I've been doing Elite Dangerous, which is a space sim. And straight after this show tonight, I'm on my Twitch stream with a whole bunch of other guys, Danny Henney, who's in iRacing, Nick, who's in the chat right now, Kyle Powell's not joining us, but normally does, doing flight sims, so DCS. So we're going to be, and I'm going to be taught to fly an F-18 straight after this show. So find me on Twitch, just search for my name, Alex Van Gene, V-A-N-G-E-E-N, and you can find me on there. And we're going to do some chat, and there's stuff up, and it'll be good fun. There's going to be up four of us in there. It'll be a good giggle.
Brilliant. And you and I are overdue a date on the VR military sim Onward. And we'll do a bit of live streaming on there as well soon. But you're subbing for Matt. Matt's picked some candidates for
comment of the week.
And we'll let Brad be the judge. Alex Van Gene, take it away.
So in true Matt Trumpet style, I have 17 of these to go through. but no, I've done it the way you want it, Spanners, which is I've actually picked three to make it actually simple. So the first one is by Stuart Bicolis F1, which is a sprint race at Monaco will at least mean the procession would be over quicker.
Ooh, but yeah, I mean, true.
When talking. when talking about Rich Energy, you got, I'm going to butcher this name, I'm really sorry, Martin Wijants,
yes,
who says Lamborghini Audi Rich Energy as a team name.
Yep, could be anything.
Bernie spelled B-E-R-N-I-E, and then Audi in there as well. Then you've got the last one is actually I've actually got two more, so I've actually got four, not three.
So you lied to us all. Okay, fine.
Is Robasher is Story's beard like Pinocchio's nose? Which I quite liked.
No!
And then there is
no, and that's then there crazy.
And then there is Bruce Siegel, which is Groovy Tires Are My Jam.
Brad.
Which I liked.
Who's the winner?
But, Brad, winner for the week.
No, hang on. Wait. No, Brad picks the winner. You just did the thing.
Yeah. On, the only one that made me laugh out loud is William Story's beard like Pinocchio's nose. That's, I love it. I assume that means the more
he lies,
fibs he tells, the longer the beard grows.
That's why his beard is so long. Alex, who gave us that?
So, Robasher, you win Comment of the Week.
Comment of the Week.
Alex, give us a read of that Comment of the Week again, just to give it some air.
Oh, got to go back to me thing now. Robasher, is Story's beard like Pinocchio's nose?
Absolutely fantastic. I have had a whale of a time on this week's Missed Apex podcast. I hope you've enjoyed listening. If you want to encourage this kind of thing, of course, you can go to patreon.com/missedapex to support us. But what we could really, really do with at the moment is just any kind of help with promotion. So an iTunes review would be fantastic. Go to iTunes and just leave a 5-star review. And I don't care what you say. I don't care how much you slag off Alex Van Gien's face or Brad's wearing hats indoors penchant. You can do all of that as long as it's 5 stars. That helps us interact with the YouTube video. Like, subscribe, comment. And on your social media, there will be a link in the show notes that you can just share and distribute amongst your friends. Even if you've got 2 followers, it helps us. Trust me. We've been doing this for 7 years and we've almost grown our audience listener by listener. And by doing that, we've built a fantastic community. So take a moment to share this with at least 2 friends, because when I'm looking for a podcast, I look for recommendations from people I trust. So tell the people that trust you that Missed Apex is a great place to follow the 2021 season. We will be back, I think, actually, on the 21st. With a show that you will enjoy, with a special guest from the world of F1 journalism. Wherever we see you next, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast.
Thank you for letting me speak for so long about tyres. That was good.
No, it was okay. I enjoyed that tyre talk for the first time ever.
I just love that it cut, literally, Matt leaves. Right, let's talk about tyres.
No, and that was always the plan. But it wasn't just a big, like, sticking my fingers up at Matt at all. It was literally because Brad had hit me in the week with that tyre topic. And I wanted to know why I was wrong and why every time I called for groove tyres, people yelled at me and called me stupid. And that's fine. And I'm happy to be wrong about that. I just wanted to know why I was wrong.
I think it's because, like, in motorsport, and specifically Formula One, everything is supposed to be there for a reason.
Yes.
Like, it's supposed to be the best thing. Like, so if it's got grooves, then they must be there because it makes it better. And that isn't the case. It'd be like having grooves in the wings. You know, if you cut sections of the wing out to reduce downforce, it's just silly. Just have smaller wings. Like, then they're as big as they can be.
You shouldn't have said that out loud. That's going to happen now. Someone's going to hear that and go... We should have grooved wings.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This is the summer to expand your horizons. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate travel shoes from Allbirds, like the breathable, silky smooth Tree Dasher, the responsive foam and extra grip of the Tree Runner, or the classic low-top look of the Tree Piper. Allbirds has a lightweight, ultra-packable shoe ready for whatever adventures you have planned. Boarding pass? Check. Passport? Check. The perfect travel shoe? Check. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.